Well, hello, friends.
Hi.
We're going to get the TV working. Yeah. Slides on a Sunday morning. We'll see how this flies. Any luck? I just get going, but it's worth it. So, all right. The traditional nativity scene. We see all the typical characters, Mary and Joseph there, cute baby Jesus in his comfy bed of hay, the shepherds, the three wise men, and somewhere in there perhaps, maybe it's on top, the glowing angel, right? Well, the people in Valencia, in Portugal, and Naples, their tradition is to add this clown. Yeah, take that in for a moment. Because what says, oh, holy night, better than somebody doing their business in the manger, right? So the folklore says that putting this guy out for all to see in your manger scene brings good things for the year ahead as he fertilizes the ground. Not an American practice, right? So he used to be a cute little guy with a pipe like Popeye, but nowadays they're keeping the holiday tradition a bit more timely with celebrity poopers, all right? So, like the late Queen Elizabeth or Donald Trump. Yeah, take that in. Or Darth Vader. Yes. However odd, our holiday traditions and stories stick with us. Hanukkah, a small ancient tribe whose candles burn a bit longer than they should. Or the Christmas story, an unwed teenage couple having a baby alongside some donkeys, a stack of hay, and evidently a man who had a thing for public defecation. But putting aside how bizarre these stories might be, they just seem to stick with us. Something is lying below the surface that we just keep coming back to. There's a profound reality underneath. It's like a song with bass notes that offer a rhythm that we just kind of organically jive with. The more you get into the trenches of these holiday tales, the clearer it becomes that there are characters here stirring up good trouble and getting themselves on their culture's naughty list and changing the world. So we're going to dive today into the story of Mary from the Christmas narrative, specifically because there's some ancient wisdom in there, some universal revelations of what it means to be human. Are you with me? All right, let's do this. So let's start with some juicy context. So back in the day, if you wanted to travel between any of these three continents, the only feasible route was through this narrow strip of land, Israel. Whoever owned this plot controlled global trade. Without access through here, Amazon speedy delivery is not happening. So this area of the Mediterranean basin at the time, go with me here and imagine, was a particularly volatile place. Yeah. Yes. So this is the land at the time of the Hebrew people and is in Mary's tribe, and it's been subjected to violent conquests for generations, with one empire after another marching in and violently claiming it as their own. Hundreds of years at Mary's time. Of this. Every global military superpower made its way through here. The Persians, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Macedonians, the Libertarians. Stick with me here. Mary would have heard stories of gruesome warfare fought over this land, passed down through generations from great-grandparents to grandparents to their children to their grandchildren, sitting around the fire, telling stories about how their people have been decimated, burnt out, scarred, and fed up. A seemingly endless stream of suffering and deep personal loss. And at Mary's time, the most recent conquerors many of us recall are the Romans. The Romans' own historian, Josephus, details the takeover of Israel around Mary's time this way in his war book. So here it goes. So when he had taken to the city, which he did at the first onset, he slew 1,000 of those young men, took their families captive, and permitted his soldiers to plunder them of their effects, meaning take all of their things, after which he set fire to their houses and then went away to the adjoining villages while the men of power fled away. And the weaker part, hashtag the women and children in this story, were destroyed. And what was remaining was all burnt down, but they ran everyone through whom they met, obstructed the very lanes with their dead bodies, made the whole city run down with blood to such a degree indeed that the fire of many of the houses was quenched with these men's blood. This is Mary's context. The Christmas story starts in this mess. From a location known as the place where good things go to die, where deep generational pain is just under the surface of everything. And the people are crying out for help from their God, for the source that they understand to be love at its purest, to be with them, because they haven't seen a dose of hope for 700 years. And echoes of these cries can be heard from Ukraine, Palestine, Israel, and our historically marginalized friends right here at home. So amidst this despair comes Mary's story, and a doctor by the name of Luke tells it this way, saying that the angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored, the Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be, but the angel told her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High." It goes on, "His kingdom will never end." So let's unpack this. Greetings, you who are highly favored. It sounds pretty serene, but let's nerd out a little here, because the original Greek word used for greeting is chare, which translates in English as hail, like hail to the queen when her pants are up. Yeah. So, as if this young, impoverished girl, Mary, who is essentially a refugee, is royalty. And the Greek term for highly favored means she's top of the seniority list. This is language reserved for those in the Roman world who've got the gods behind them. Highly favored is a culture term for those who lead wars, who conquer, where the greatest bravery is required and the most danger is sure to meet them. So barely a teenager Mary is being called out as this part of this camp of heroes. So they say Mary's kid will be the Son of the Most High, which is not a Hebrew term. It's a Roman phrase for the Caesars, the head honcho, the president, top dog in the kingdom. The problem is that the only kingdoms Mary has seen are soaked in bloodshed. So Mary would have understood that her child becoming Son of the Most High meant at face value overthrowing the Romans. Mary is birthing an enemy of the state, y'all. Top 10 wanted lists. She understands the implications and their dangers. And in the end, this 13-year-old minority girl from a third-rate town says, "Game on. Let's do this." But she's got some questions first. She's a practical girl. She says, "How shall this be, seeing I know not a man?" You catch that, right? Seeing I know not a man, in the biblical sense. So she's a practical girl, and she says, "So how's this virgin birth thing gonna work?" So let's geek out and dive deep here into the Orthodox Jewish translation. You ready for this? "But Miriam said to the Malak, 'How will this be, since I do not have das of an ish?'" Yes, nothing says things are getting steamy like das of an ish. Yeah. "But by the end of this conversation, Mary surrenders to it. And there's beauty and power in this kind of surrender. It's nothing such as weakness. It's surrendering to change, to birthing a new path. And that's anything and everything other than weakness. It's like how they say that you conquer the wind when you stop fighting it. And then, and only then, can you ride it. So Dr. Luke goes on to say that Mary follows this interaction by singing an original song. She puts out her single on Spotify for all of us to hear, yeah? And actually, it's her response to what she's heard and what she's signing up for. So, it's no humble lullaby Mary makes up. This is an anthem for our revolution. The lyrics go, "My spirit rejoices in God, my Savior. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the lowly, filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the callous rich away empty." So she sings about a savior, and the word savior is often used in ancient traditions as a wartime term for soldier. It's loaded military propaganda here. The Roman Caesar was widely called savior, celebrated for making peace through victory, creating order through violence, lining the streets, if you recall, with bodies and quenching fires with their blood. But here in Mary's story, the term savior or lead soldier is being used in a much more creative and provocative way. The way of Mary's soldier is to bring down the folks who are exploiting others through their power and raising up those on their last leg. Mary's boy will be a new kind of soldier, one who isn't going to follow the norm of bringing some sort of temporary peace through force, because we know that always hurts those with the least. So whether it's ancient Rome or today's geopolitical aggressors or the microaggressions we take against others in our daily lives, this continues to be a wild concept that violence is the virus, not the medicine. Mary rejects the empire's propaganda and she embraces this counterculture. She envisions a world that isn't run by exclusion and brutality, where oppressive systems don't have their control. She sings a song envisioning a better world for the underdogs, those that have reached rock bottom, the marginalized, those left in the corner and just feeling alone. These are the people that love says are to be on the front of the line. This song of Mary is considered so subversive that the Argentine government banned it from public recitation at protest marches. Mary's kid, Jesus, goes on to live out her song. And during his 3-year public campaign, one of his main speeches included saying that the prostitutes were entering his kingdom, enjoying the good life, well before those who have made bedfellows with the misuse of power. And history says those kinds of messages of empowerment throughout history, they are dangerous and powerful. They bring the messengers both joy and suffering. But isn't that what it means to be human, right? To fully experience life, we must hold both joy and suffering. In Hebrew, the name Mary translates as two streams. It has Egyptian roots, and it means beloved and also a sea of sorrows. Two streams. Freedom. Joy. A sense of belonging. And at the same time, heavy burdens and pain. So if you're dancing with these two streams in your life, you're in good company. If you're frustrated with how things are right now versus how you imagine they could be for your life, your family, our community, our world, you're not alone. Mary's story tells us that when we don't conform to the status quo or when we're on our last leg, we're in just the right place for new things to be born. I mean, imagine a life where you come in contact with every beloved and suffering person, creature, and living thing, and offer loving kindness to all. Mary's song says that love is now available, and not just for the high and mighty, but for all of us. So it may require a new anthem to march our lives to, a rhythm that could take us out of sync with our culture, our family. But here's the secret, y'all. When you and I make choices that prioritize beauty and equity and kindness, that's love at its purest. And the biblical narrative and the long arc of history tell us that in the end, love wins. Love wins. And on the journey to love winning, it sings a song of revolution. Like every creation story, the Creator speaks and it's made real because words make worlds. So consider the lyrics in your mind and in your heart, the words and the stories that we tell ourselves, the anthems that we choose to let stir around in our hearts. May the lyrics of your song be a reminder that love wins. And here's to this season of new births.